hari gopi jana balava giri manjari Yasuranandana brajajanaranjana Yasuranandana brajajanaranjana Yamunatira manachave Ravanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Jana Ballava Giri Vanajari Yasuranandana brajajanaranjana Yamunathira vanachari Jaya Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam Radhe Shyam, Jaya Radhe Shyam Krishna Balaram, Jaya Krishna Balaram, Krishna Balaram, Jaya Krishna Balaram, Jaya Gauranitai, 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 Jaya Gauranitai. Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada. वैष्णव संग की जाए गौर भंगनंदे Om Namo Bhagavate. Well, that does work, actually. I was just thinking, as Mukhi was leaving to go to her car, Indra opened up the rain for his own Abhishek of our temple president, so that's very auspicious. Very auspicious. If you needed any other further glorification as to how dear she is to all the demigods. You know, as I came in and took darshan of Radhasham Sundar Krishna Balamukta Gaur, I was just amazed once again at the incredible Sringar we have here in this community. I mean, the backdrops are hand painted, the face painting on the deities is just so amazing. The outfits, you know, day after day after day, everything is just so incredible. And of course, as I like to say, when the club is here, you have no fear. Lord Balaram will protect us. So this is actually the first Sunday feast I've spoken at in a while, to the point to where I said to Pran Govinda, when did they move the seat back here? He said about 3 months ago. I said, yeah, I guess it's been that long, because, you know, most of us listen from home, whatever. One of the nice things about the opportunity to speak on the Sunday feast is that one can choose the subject of their liking. Many times it's a point that someone's been contemplating on, and I'd like to speak this evening, I picked a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, from the fourth canto, eighth chapter, verse 35. It's Dhruva Maharaj. The instructions that we receive in the Srimad Bhagavatam from Dhruva Maharaj are really, really very amazing. You know, of course, we say that about every section of the Bhagavatam because the Bhagavatam is itself incredible. But the section where Dhruva Maharaj is giving instructions is very practical for us on a daily life basis because, well, I'll let the verse in 4.4 speak for itself. Translation. Dhruva Maharaj said, "My dear Lord Naradaji, for a person whose heart is disturbed by the material conditions of happiness and distress, whatever you have so kindly explained for attainment of peace of mind is certainly a very good instruction. But as far as I am concerned, I am covered by ignorance, and this kind of philosophy does not touch my heart." Very sobering verse from Dhruva Maharaj and in the purport by Srila Prabhupada. There are various classes of men. One class is called Akami, referring to those who have no material desire. Desire must exist, either material or spiritual. Material desire arises when one wants to satisfy one's personal senses. One who is ready to sacrifice anything to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead can be said to have spiritual desire. Dhruva did not accept the instruction given by the great Saint Narada because he thought himself unfit for such instruction, which prohibited all material desires. It is not a fact, however, that those who have material desires are prohibited from worshiping the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thankful for us. This is the essential instruction from the life of Dhruva. He frankly admitted that his heart was full of material desires. He was very much affected by the cruel words of his stepmother, whereas those who are spiritually advanced do not care about anyone's condemnation or adoration. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that persons who are actually advanced in spiritual life do not care for the dual behavior of the material world. But Dhruva Maharaj frankly admitted that he was not beyond the affliction of material distress and happiness. He was confident that the instructions given by Narada were valuable, yet he could not accept them. The question raised here is whether or not a person afflicted by material desires is fit to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The answer is that everyone is fit to worship him. Even if one has many material desires to fulfill, he should take to Krishna consciousness and worship the Supreme Lord Krishna, who is so merciful that he fulfills everyone's desires. Through this narration, it will become clear that no one is barred from worshiping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even if one has material desires. Om Jnana Tamaram Dasya, Jnana Jnana Shalakaya, Chaksu Unmali Tamina Tasmai Sri Guru Vinamaha, Mukam Karoti Vatsalam, Tanjunam Jai Tegari, Yakri Patamaham Bandai Sri Guru Vinatarina. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasa Gaura Bhakti Vinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vancha Kalpa Tiri Vyashtha Kripa Sindhu Vahe Vacha Patitanam Pavane Vyo Vaishna Vibhyo Namo Namaha. This is a very interesting verse. The subject of the speaker of the verse is talk that what's being spoken about and the sub-meaning underneath it both deal with the very same topic, with the duality that we face in this material world. Right now we have a very classic example. Everyone is trying to stay dry. We're nicely situated in this building. But those on the veranda or those that worship have to make a run for their car right now or go in between buildings. The very thought is, how do I stay dry? How do I not get wet? But the very nature of what's going on outside this second is a downpour. It's impossible to move from one place to the other through this without getting wet. That's the duality. That's a perfect example of the duality discussed here, is that there is a need or an interest to do one thing while something else is the reality. You see that right here. So what to speak of so many examples, this is the sunum bonum of the material world, that there is duality. And after all, who better to know about duality than Dhruva Maharaj? It's an interesting phenomenon we see nowadays to hear people whine and complain about how hard their childhood was and how the result of that has made them the troubled adult that they are now. Well, here in the story of Dhruva Maharaj, we see a very difficult childhood. Yet, he's considered to be one of the shining examples in Krishna consciousness and respected amongst all Vaishnava devotees. Materially, fate was totally against Dhruva Maharaj. His father only marginally loved him. His stepmother was verbally and emotionally abusive to him. His own mother, who, although very loving and kind and able to give very good instructions to him, held back her efforts to do these things due to the social stigma of being the less favored wife. He spends his boyhood, his childhood and his boyhood, living in a wild forest, eating only roots and leaves, and then eating nothing at all but air, just existing on air. I mean, shall we continue? The difficulties of the life of Dhruva Maharaj, they're insurmountable by the average normal person. Yet, nothing could stand in the way of him pursuing his goal, and that was to get the darshan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. His attitude was, oh, this is what it takes? All right, then I'm doing it. And he was only 5 years old. Now, I know a thing or two about five-year-olds. I've raised three of my own. I have three granddaughters. I have a grandson. And I guess it's okay to say, because everybody seems to know, I have another grandchild on the way. I teach classes at the Bhaktivedanta Academy, and some of those classes are to the five-year-olds. To be plain-spoken, five-year-olds have the attention span of a fly. They have the ability to focus of an old pair of broken binoculars, and they have the memory span of someone, well, in my age group. So sometimes if you put a question to them, by the time they enthusiastically raise their hand to answer, they've forgotten what the question and the answer both were. So, you know, this happens quite often. Now, this isn't a fault that has to be corrected. Oh, just see these five-year-olds, they don't have very good attention, they can't, so how do we correct them? No, it's not a fault. It's the nature of five-year-olds. It's the way young children are. Eventually, they mature and grow out of that. But at that age, it's how they are. There is an exception. That exception would be my own son, Namananda. When Namananda was 4 and 5 years old, as Prabhupada would like to say, he was a very naughty child. So sometimes, all right, go and sit in the corner. Prabhupada speaks like this about the impersonalist. It caused so much difficulty. Okay, there is no God. Just don't get involved in anything. Everything is nothing. You know, so sometimes Namananda had to be told, sit in the corner until you're ready to, you know, apologize or stop doing what you're doing, whatever the case was. He was so determined. He would sit in that corner until he fell asleep. And we'd have to carry him and put him in his bed. So we see here this type of serious determination is the complete character of Dhruva Maharaj at this age. All of the apparent disqualifications for pursuing a tapasvi, a very strict type of life that would not ordinarily be accessible, are there in him. He has a guru at the personality of Narada Muni. He's given a mantra in the form of Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. How glorious to have that. And ultimately, he's given the darshan of the Lord himself. Not bad for a five-year-old kid. So he clearly knows a thing or two about happiness and distress. By the age of five, he's very seriously determined this. But this determination to overcome these difficulties, this was there. But what was he determined for? He was determined to get a kingdom greater than his father and his grandfather. Because then no one would be able to withhold these things from me that I desire. So this was his goal. Now, I have one treasure of mine. I have this little carved wooden box. And, you know, we've all seen them, these typical little Indian wooden boxes you get there, said to be made out of teak wood, but maybe they're made out of some kind of wood, who knows. And occasionally they have some design carving on them and a little inlaid ivory, or actually inlaid plastic. And we've all seen them or have one in our home. Many years ago, when my wife and I were visiting Mukya in Sarasota, we stopped at one secondhand store down there. And my wife has an amazing mystic ability to walk into a secondhand store and find those things from Saks Fifth Avenue and Neiman Marcus and, you know, whatever, you know. She's just incredible like that. And real Shakti. So not being interested in what she was shopping for, I went to the back and was just kind of looking over the odd and end shelf, and I saw one of these wooden boxes. And I picked it up and looked at it. And when I saw what was on the top of it, I knew I had to have this box. So I took it up front to the gentleman. I think the price on it was marked at $20. And I offered him well south of that, and he offered me north, and we bartered a little bit. And I ended up walking out of there with it for about $12. The top of this box has a hand carving of Dhruva Maharaj sitting on a tree stump in the forest and Vishnu touching his head with a conch shell. This is right out of the Srimad Bhagavatam. I knew I had to have that box. I still have that box to this day. So this was the type of life that Dhruva Maharaj embraced in order to overcome the obstacles that were in front of him for what he desired. Now this verse itself is a wonderful verse about the dualities of pain and pleasure, about the dualities of happiness and distress. And we, as devotees, you know, as aspiring devotees, whichever the case is, we can take refuge in the fact that Dhruva Maharaj confirms, yes, your instructions, Naradji, they are very beneficial. They can bring one peace of mind, because we're all striving in this world to get peace of mind. We're distressed by this, we're in anxiety about that, we're anxious for this. And so by taking these instructions of Narada Muni, which have come in the previous verses to this one, one can attain that peace of mind. And they will carry to the intended result. So we should all be very happy to know that this is true, and Dhruva Maharaj is confirming it. And that by sitting here daily or weekly or whatever our occasion is to listen to lectures, whether they be our current individuals in ISKCON or the recordings of Srila Prabhupada, so many opportunities to hear. There is no shortage of means by which we can hear the divine message of the Lord. So we should be very happy to know that this is all qualified, confirmed, definitely stated to be a fact. And we will get great benefit and blessings from hearing and following these things. But then, Dhruva Maharaj gives the downside of this. He says, but as far as I'm concerned, I am covered by ignorance, and this type of philosophy that you're discussing does not touch my heart. Ouch. That should really give a bit of discomfort to us. I mean, who in this room feels like maybe that instruction does not fit them? I mean, does fit them, actually, does apply to them. I think at least all of us are taught to feel that way, that yes, I'm too fallen to be able to do this. Now, if Dhruva Maharaj feels like that, who are we? How are we to embrace that idea ourselves? Bhagavatam describes who we are very clearly. Kalo Sudra Sambhava. We are born with no, and that's a capital N-O, no qualifications. Interesting thing about that. Maybe some of you remember when you were young, your mother and father, if you'd ask for something and then say no, and you'd gonna, they say, I said no, N-O. Well, you knew at that point your chances of getting whatever you were hoping for were diminished, completely gone. So this is us. We have no qualification. The Bhagavatam describes unlucky, quarrelsome, misguided, lazy, disturbed. Plain and simple, this deck is stacked against us. So if Dhruva Maharaj is feeling that he himself fits into this category, and that such instructions given by his spiritual master Naradji are not suitable for him, then what hope is there for us? Dhruva Maharaj is actually considered one of the great Mahajans. And this is, of course, one of those reasons why, because of his amazing humility. Now, fortunately for us, we do have a guide to help us go beyond this in the form of Srila Prabhupada and in the form of Srila Prabhupada's books. Prabhupada's sole focus was to give Krishna consciousness to a unlucky, quarrelsome, misguided, lazy, disturbed class of people. And in case you're not certain, that's us. Imagine, if you can, the circumstances that Srila Prabhupada found himself in. Some of the men that I have a sangha with, we've been reading Guru Das's book lately on his early days with Srila Prabhupada. And you can read Shamsundar's also, and then of course there's the Prabhupada Lilamrita, and these describe all of these different books by these early devotees. They describe the circumstances that Srila Prabhupada found himself in. Completely foreign culture with no understanding of what a sadhu is, what to speak of, how to respect or treat or deal with a sadhu, or to hear from a sadhu. None of this was understood. And this is the culture that Prabhupada came into. A culture where in order to get into his front door, he had to step over drunken bums in the Bowery. This was their nature. Some of them had the good sense to get up and maybe dust themselves off and apologize for being in his way. That was their great fortune. So this is the world that Srila Prabhupada came into with his Bhaktivedanta purports. Bhaktivedanta purports, there to give us guidance. So we have to daily keep ourselves in association with these Bhaktivedanta purports. This is one famous story. I think I mentioned it recently. Shri Kirti came into Srila Prabhupada's room and Prabhupada was reading one of the Bhagavatams. Of course, Prabhupada wrote these. And Shri Kirti asked him, he said, Prabhupada, you're reading your books? He says, yes, I like to see what Krishna has said. This is the humility of the pure devotee. I have written these books. I don't need to look at them. No, Krishna has written them through me. Krishna has used me as the instrument. So let's see what he has said. So, you know, for this reason, it is important to stay in touch with Srila Prabhupada's instructions. Endless CD, you know, you can listen on your phone, you can listen in your car, you can listen in your, you can even tune into your smart TV and there's Prabhupada's lectures right there and Prabhupada sitting on the Vyasas on speaking. So many opportunities are there for us, you know. This is a wonderful opportunity for us. And this opportunity to be in touch with Prabhupada's books will remove all the obstacles that are in our path and that are brought on to us by this day and age that we live in. And then add to that the mantra of the holy names, which has been given to us by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And well, I mean, to be perfectly frank, you have all the blessings anybody could ask for. All the full opportunity for embracing Krishna consciousness, purifying our lives, and going back to home, back to Godhead. Prabhupada's instructions, Prabhupada's books, and the nectar of the holy name. These three things. It's a common thing that you can analyze a spiritual scenario and say that there are five things here, or four things there, or three things there that will benefit us. These three things mentioned right here, they will greatly benefit us. So we should very enthusiastically embrace these. Now, in this purport here, Srila Prabhupada does make some distinctions. There's a general instruction, just chant Hare Krishna and everything will be fine. And then there's the detail, while you're chanting Hare Krishna, be sure to do A, B, C, D like that. Now, in the instructions on this purport, the subject of material desire is approached. I think we can safely say that none of us sitting here are akamis, are free of material desire. And Prabhupada mentions that that's all right. That's all right. And Prabhupada additionally clarifies, just in case there's any doubt, well, you know, maybe that's really a spiritual desire that I've got, but I just think it's a spiritual, a material desire. Prabhupada clarifies very, very. Material desire is that desire which is meant to satisfy one's own senses, separate and apart from satisfying the senses of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, the world is filled with people whose entire life is centered around this particular point, satisfying their own senses. What they eat, how they eat, what they do, where they go, what they hear, what they speak, all of that is based upon how it satisfies the senses. If you have the opportunity to associate with non-devotees in their own environment, if you can use the term, you get to see this firsthand. We all know that a healthy diet is essential for keeping one's health and body and mind, as Prabhupada would say, together. And that a healthy diet means food which is of the first class degree. I'm amazed at the number of people I see regularly that I know of at least two, if not three, of their meals are from fast food places. Processed food that has no soul in it, that has no nutrients in it, and has no medicinal value to it. So sometimes, occasionally, there's a circumstance, all right, something like that. But for that to be the regular diet that one's following, and walking around and eating it while engaging in four and five other things, when Srila Prabhupada would take prasadam, he would sit quietly in a room by himself, and this would be a service honoring Krishna prasadam. I had the good fortune once or twice to serve Srila Prabhupada lunch. And it was never a big, you know, 10 or 15, 20 people there in the room and so much conversation. It was a quiet meditation for him. And Prabhupada's servants of many years confirmed this. This was Prabhupada's mood. So what to speak of Krishna prasadam, this doesn't even come close to being food in the mode of goodness. And this is the type of diet. Now, with such a diet, how can one expect to have a healthy body? And how can one expect to have a peaceful mind? It simply is not possible. And why is it going on? Because the desire to eat is only being done to satisfy the senses. So we can analyze everything in the life of those who are materially motivated, that everything they do is simply for sense gratification. Prabhupada would give that example. Here is our temple, and next door there is a house. In both places, similar activities are going on. People are sleeping, people are executing activities, people are eating, people are cleaning. But in our temple, we're doing all of this for Krishna. And because of that, we're making the greatest benefit. Because of that, Krishna is satisfied. Because of that, we're getting his blessings, his mercy. This was why Prabhupada encouraged that in the home of every householder, there should be an altar. Because then that home becomes the residence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not a place for our own sense gratification. We cook something in the home, we offer it first to Krishna. Some flowers are brought into the home, they're taken and they're put on the altar for Krishna. In this way, Prabhupada tells a wonderful story that there was one very wealthy man, and in his home, of course, he had a temple, had proper deities. And as is the custom, there was a Brahmin that was a part of the family, that stayed there and took care of the deities. The grandmother, and make no mistake about it, the grandmother runs things. She's in charge. And the grandmother had given the temple priest, the household temple priest, the understanding that any of my children that do not come and see the deity first thing in the morning, you please let me know. And they will be fined. And so this was the system. If you didn't get up, perform your morning bath, dress yourself, and go first to see the deity, then the grandmother would come and you had to pay some fine. So this is because the deity was the center of the home. This is the way we should each have things in our house, that everything we do starts upon the foundation of spiritual desires, which is the next point the Prabhupada makes here. He notes what is a spiritual desire. And he says, a spiritual desire is when we are ready to sacrifice anything to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, we all have some spiritual desires. We come to the temple, we engage daily in some type of sadhana, some chanting, some principles that we follow, some vows that we take. This particular month here, Purushottama, many devotees are taking extra vows, doing extra performances of austerities, of vratas, increasing their chanting, increasing their reading, so many different things. So these are spiritual desires because they don't have anything to do with me getting any material benefit. There's no material benefit, but there is great spiritual benefit to these types of activities. So this is the point that we have to be very attentive to. What is the difference between material and spiritual desires, and which ones am I cultivating by the activities that I'm performing? Now, the next point that Prabhupada makes in this purport is very important. He says, and I quote, "This is the essential instruction from the life of Dhruva. He frankly admitted that his heart was full of material desires. He was very much afflicted by the cruel words of his stepmother, whereas those who are spiritually advanced do not care about anyone's condemnation and adoration." Now, two things about this, two things about these three sentences in this purport stand out. And the first one is the Prabhupada says, this is the essential instruction. Now, right away, that should jump out and grab our attention. We should become very alert, very attentive when we hear something like that. If you're taking a college class, and at the beginning of the class, the professor says, here is the essential thing you should note from this class this semester. You're going to get your pen and paper out or your iPhone and whatever it is you're making notes on and make a point of that, right? If the teacher says, in the test, this is the essential point I want you to understand, then you're very attentive to that because you know that when the test comes, I want to pass it. Here's the essential point. So we listen very carefully. And Prabhupada is saying right here, this is the essential point. Those who are spiritually advanced do not care for anyone's condemnation or adoration. Now, how much of our day, how much of our life is spent worrying about what others think about our actions? Worrying about what others think about our appearance? Worrying about whether we're going to be liked or disliked for something we do or something we said? This is a very important point. Most of us spend the majority of our day thinking in this way. This is material consciousness. Because the activity itself of thinking like that has nothing to do with perfecting our service to Krishna, and it has nothing to do with relieving ourselves of material desires, material consciousness. We see that there is often this difficulty in management. Now, it doesn't matter management of a corporation or management of anything, but we're talking about a society of devotees here. So within our ISKCON society, we see that there is an element of people that are very much happy to take note of the behavior of others and point out what the fault is in that behavior and, you know, make great commentary on that fault that they have perceived. Because after all, I know what's correct. And if everybody listened to me, then everything would be right. There'd be no problems. So this type of mentality has a name. It's called apparati. It's called offenders. One has to be very cautious about analyzing or viewing devotees with a critical eye. There's endless stories in the lives of our Vaishnava acharyas that go to this point. One of my favorite concerns Advaita Acharya. Advaita Acharya was on pilgrimage in Vrindavan, Mathura. We find that all the great acharyas that lived in Bengal made their pilgrimage, went to Vrindavan. So he was in Mathura and he happened to meet one Mathura Brahmin. Now this Brahmin was very learned in all the Shastras. This Brahmin was very knowledgeable of all the proper activities. But this Brahmin had one fault. He was very, enthusiastic to criticize and point out the faults of Vaishnavas. Not a very good thing for one's devotional creeper, for the development of one's devotional life. This Brahmin was so foolish that in the company of Advaita Acharya, he pointed out faults of some devotees. It describes that Advaita Acharya's eyes became like molten fire, that his voice became roaring like a lion. And he yelled at this Brahmin, "You are the greatest of offenders. Because of your offense, I will send you to the gates of hell." Now the Brahmin did have enough common sense to realize that he had crossed the line here, that Advaita Acharya was serious and that he had committed a grave offense. He immediately fell at the lotus feet of Advaita Acharya, touching his feet with his hands and his head and begging to be forgiven, begging to be given another chance, pleading that he would do anything that Advaita Acharya instructed him if he would just please not curse him in this way. Advaita Acharya said, "All right, but I will give you four conditions. The first one is that you give up this tendency to criticize others. The second one is that you purify from your mind the desire to want to criticize others. The third is that you go to the home of every Vaishnava in Mathura, offer your obeisances and pray for their forgiveness. And the fourth, you don't tell anyone about this exchange between us." It's noted that this Brahmin did just that, all four of these things. People would say, "What has happened to this Brahmin? He would come to someone's house and knock on their door and fall at the dust and beg forgiveness and ask for their blessings and their mercy, and he did this to the home of every Vaishnava." Well, the Vaishnavas knew he had met with Advaita Acharya. He had had his company, and so they all concluded, rightfully so, that Advaita Acharya had influenced him in this way. So in this way, we see that the danger of finding fault with others, the danger of criticizing devotees, is a very grave offense. And this is just one example of numerous. I mean, it doesn't take hardly any effort at all to find in all of the Chaitanya Lila literatures, what to speak of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the gross reaction to criticizing devotees. So there is a good side to this stuff. We can concern ourselves with how Krishna consciousness is perceived and whether we are acting properly as devotee when we see how other devotees act. If we're going to be conscious of what do people think of me, let it be because we want to raise the standard of our behavior to that of a Vaishnava, to that of my associates, to that of those that we read and hear about, This should be how we concern ourselves with what people like or dislike about us. Not to the point to where we're, you know, worried about anyone's condemnation and adoration, as Prabhupada says, but to the point to where we are striving to live the life that we see exemplified in the Vaishnavas surrounding us. This is how we do this. There's another important point that's not directly addressed, but that is clear in this verse, and that is one of humility. Dhruva Maharaj is the embodiment of a humble devotee. Now, true, he is in front of his guru, and this is at least the time one would be expected to manifest their humility in the presence of one's spiritual master. If there was ever a time to be humble, that would be it, to be in front of a spiritual master like that. But we see that, you know, his genuine humility in speaking to Narada manifests in his examination of his own lack of qualifications for executing properly devotional service. Now, there is a duality. This isn't always true that one is humble in front of the spiritual master. But knowing that the instruction of the spiritual master is to our own benefit, as the early devotees always said when asked about Prabhupada, they said, we always knew that he would never cheat us. And we've all had this experience. No one ever felt cheated by taking shelter of Srila Prabhupada. No one ever felt cheated by following Srila Prabhupada's example. So we have to be able to understand this instruction and see how it will benefit us and how it will help us. But some may not be able to accept that right away. This is the neophyte stage of devotional service. And the process for coming to the point of being able to do that is sadhusanga, associating with each other, rendering service together, hearing and chanting together. Prabhupada says this is why he established this ISKCON society, for the assembly of Vaishnavas. Now, nowadays with the circumstances, our assembly may be slightly different. Many people are assembling online. You know, the online audience. That's the interesting thing about this pandemic's influence, is now people are taking association devotees from all over the world at all kinds of times. Many of us have been invited to speak Sunday feast lectures in countries that we've never even been to. Or I got the opportunity a week or so ago to speak at my old alma mater, the temple I grew up in St. Louis. What's the opportunity for me to hop on a plane and fly to St. Louis and do a Sunday feast lecture? But because we're now reaching out for other ways that we can associate with each other, and the amount of sangha, the amount of programs that are designed specifically for the internet, that are designed specifically on these Zoom platforms. I tell you what, if anybody was smart, they would have bought stock in Zoom well before this all happened. What was that I read the other day? 351 increase in their stock prices. At any rate, all of these platforms are ways by which we can take association. So we should never feel that, well, yeah, but if it wasn't this or that, or, well, I'd really like to, but, you know, I can't really spend much time with the devotees. I don't get an opportunity. I can't go to the temple. We all have iPhones. Every single person's got an iPhone or an Android or whatever it is. And you can download Prabhupada's entire library right there. While I'm sitting in the doctor's office the other day, I'm reading Srimad Bhagavatam. It's right there in this little tiny little thing. Every one of Prabhupada's books are right there. I mean, how amazing is that? Every one of Prabhupada's lectures. You can listen to his lectures. So all of these facilities are there if we have a genuine inspiration. And this is how we overcome the duality that's mentioned in this verse. This is how we understand the guidance and instruction that Srila Prabhupada is giving to us and apply it to our daily lives. Is Dhruva Maharaj really a conditioned soul who is unable to give up material desire? We know otherwise. But the true humility of an acharya, the true humility of a mahajan, is that they see themselves in that way. Is it that he really cannot accept the instructions of Narada Muni? None of this is factual, but this is the genuine humility that manifests itself in the character. So for the sake of instructing others in spiritual life, many times the Acharya will step down from their elevated position to give an example of how to behave in devotional service. But this is the importance of reading Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the importance of hearing from Srila Prabhupada. This is the importance of reading Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Chaitanya Charitamrita, all of these books, is that it gives us the opportunity to see the example of others, of great devotees, and follow that example, and by doing so, enable ourselves to overcome the duality that this verse clearly is talking about. The duality of happiness and distress, the duality of, you know, being desirous for something material, but being able to transform that into something spiritual. So this is a point from this particular verse that I thought I'd speak a little something on. It's a very important verse. As I said, any time Prabhupada says, this is the essential instruction, we should think, oh, this, I should pay attention to this, I should read this. So we'll finish there. If anyone has any comments or questions, we'll try and take them. Otherwise, we'll face the duality of getting to our vehicles and trying not to get soaked in rain. All right. Well, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Vaishnava Sangha ki jai, Radha Shama Sundar ki jai, Gaura Premanandi.
Krishna Krishnaya Bhutare Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami.